What I normally do is do like a rolling intro, so I'll just we'll just talk for a couple of minutes, and then I'll find a bit that's like, oh, that's a nice little amusing intro, then intro thing. Goodbye, Caroline. Be sure you're quiet when you come back. Yeah, luckily middle fingers don't show up on the recording.
Yeah, but my snivering will.
That Research Life. So, hello, welcome to another episode of That Research Life podcast. This is a podcast that talks to early career researchers, PhD students and the like. I'm your host, Phil Moxley, and with me today is probably the youngest and shortest way through their PhD guest that we've had so far, Ms. Alex Martin. Say hello, Alex Martin.
Hello, Alex Martin.
Thank you very much. So, I know Alex because she is the little sister of my I don't like using the word girlfriend because it's been like 7 years and it seems a little informal, my partner. Hi, thanks for being on the podcast. Why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself, a bit of educational background, and we'll move on to what it is you're doing for your research in a bit.
Okay. So I'm Alex Martin. I'm currently based at the University of Birmingham. I've been there now for 5, approaching 6 years, so I like the city.
Yeah, not just on the PhD.
No, not just on the PhD. I did my undergraduate there, which was a master's included, but yeah, I really like it up there. My undergraduate was in chemistry with physics, and now I'm doing a PhD in chemistry.
So I, because I'm a little bit privileged in knowing a bit of your background, I'm right in thinking that you didn't start doing physics and chemistry. Was it natural sciences?
Well, it was called natural sciences, but my two majors were chemistry and physics.
Okay. So for the people that don't know what natural sciences is, because it sounds a bit vague, like if I think... possibly the layperson would think, oh, you know, you're looking at trees, that's nature.
Yeah.
what's the theme of natural sciences?
So it's a combination of different science subjects, so both biological and sort of tree subjects as well as physical sciences. I know some people who actually had like maths and like theoretical physics involved, which doesn't really seem all that natural science to me, but...
On the broad picture, everything is nature, I guess.
Yeah, so it's quite similar to the, I guess, the... University of Cambridge natural sciences, but sure. Other universities.
Yeah, well, I think Warwick does it as well.
I can't say I actually looked at that one for natural sciences.
Well,
but
I could be imagining that, but I feel like it's a thing that Warwick do. So you did your undergrad three or four years.
4 years.
Four years, mm-hmm. And you're now doing a PhD. So how did you fall into doing a PhD?
So in the fourth year of my undergraduate, I was doing a research project in chemistry, and that was in the research group that I'm with now. So about halfway through that project, my supervisor said to me that she was applying for funding for a PhD project, and if I was interested to apply for it. So that was good feedback to say I'm not rubbish.
Yeah, that's pretty life-affirming. That's good. Okay, so what is your PhD on?
So my PhD is in biophysical chemistry, and I'm...
So it really is all three,
just all science.
The biophysical chemistry, mathematics, just there, everything.
Yeah, I've just been interdisciplinary the whole way through. My project is looking at lipid-peptide interactions, so I'm looking at cell membranes.
Okay, let's back things up a little bit. What are lipid-peptides, or lipids and peptides?
Lipids are like the fatty molecules that are found in cell membranes, so they make up the main structure of cell membranes.
Right.
And peptides are small proteins, and proteins are also found in cell membranes.
Okay. So I'm aware that you... how far into your PhD are you at the minute?
So I'm coming up to the end of my first year of research.
Right, okay. So maybe you don't have a thrust of your PhD yet. You've got a broad subject area, and over the next couple of years you're going to narrow down.
Yeah.
But what... do you have a broad outline of the sort of work that you're doing?
So I've got quite a few different experiments that I do, and I guess my work will be using those different experiments on the same kind of system, and depending on what works and what doesn't work, we'll see what ends up in the thesis, I guess. But so structure wise, I guess in most of the first and second year, maybe most half of third year, I guess I'll just keep doing experiments and hoping for the...
Okay, and what sort of experiments are you doing?
So I do a lot of infrared spectroscopy experiments. This is looking at the structure of chemical molecules and how they change as we change an environment. I also do a lot of electrochemistry, and any other chemists out there are shying away now from electrochemistry.
Okay.
And
when you say they're shying away, how do you mean?
Oh, electrochemistry isn't a popular brand or isn't a popular part of chemistry.
Well, why is that?
It's difficult.
Okay, yeah, fine, completely with it.
And a lot of the equations don't make a lot of sense.
Okay, yeah, that's been my experience of science in general.
Yep.
Right, so infrared spectroscopy, yep. What's that?
So this is using light to probe molecules, where we hit molecules with light, and depending on the light that's absorbed, we can work out what the molecules are or what kind of...
Okay, so it a little bit like taking a picture of it.
Sort of, yeah.
Sort of, right, yeah, in a very, very basic sense of fine. Okay, and with those experiments, you've done a few already.
Mm-hmm.
Can you maybe go into what it is specifically you've been trying to look at?
So specifically what we're interested in is how cell membrane molecules behave in a changing electric field, which is okay. How they are in a natural environment. There's all sorts of electric field gradients in the human body. So we're interested in how they behave in that.
Okay. I keep doing this. I'm going to keep dragging people back down the slightly more, like, can you explain what you've just said?
Yep, fair enough.
You said we have different electrical fields, electric field gradients in the body. Can you give me an example of that, of what that means?
So within cells and outside of cells, there'll be different ion, sort of like calcium ions, sodium ions, and the difference in charge inside and outside of a cell
okay.
means that there's a field strength.
Yeah, charge. Forestall anybody thinking that, like, oh well, you know, put a wire across this bit of the body and that bit of the body, and you've got we can power a light bulb. But no, less smaller effect size than that.
Yeah, much smaller.
Okay, so how many experiments have you done so far?
Oh dear, I've got experimental folders on equipment going back to 2014 because I've been in the lab that long.
Okay. Oh, so part of your master's, it is a continuation of the work you're doing with your. That's convenient.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that happens quite a lot.
Yeah. If you like the work, a lot of people do stay in it.
So, I guess then a fairly typical day for you involves quite a lot of lab work.
Yeah, I suppose so. It depending on if I'm on analysis mode, I call it, and that was in quotation marks, I can either spend the whole time...
Yeah, air quotes don't show up on podcasts.
Yeah, I didn't think so. But yeah, normal day for me, I'm usually the first one into the office or in the lab, of my lab group, go set up experiments in the lab, hopefully. Depending on what the temperature is of the day, because I do a lot of things under temperature control,
right.
So trying to cool things down to 18 degrees. That can take some time. But,
sure. Do you have like a temperature controlled lab, or do you just have to get in and like crank up the AC until you're in the right?
So we use a water bath. So we have a
bain-marie. Yeah.
That's what you want to call it. Yeah.
Far more of a cook than I am a biologist. So.
Fair enough. But yeah, we'll connect that to the equipment and hope that will set. But no, we do not have an air controlled lab.
Okay. Maybe need a bit more funding before that will happen. Okay. So, I'm guessing you're not particularly far into the write-up?
So, because I will have to hand in my thesis at the end of my research, I won't have a sort of 6 months to a year.
Yeah, so that's called doing a fill, yeah.
Well, not even that, but it will be quite continuous as I go. So I've had a couple of reports due in my first year that I've been writing in thesis style, so unless they're awful, they
let's hope not.
Let's hope not. I'm waiting for some feedback from my first year report at the moment, but haven't had anything from my supervisor to say awful yet. So.
Okay, that's good. Well, yeah, touch wood.
Yeah. So they'll probably be the groundwork of.
So it's going to be almost like a 3 or 4 paper thesis where you have specific experiments and you can write them up here is a standalone chapter.
Yeah, that's what I'm aiming for. That each type of experiment will have its own chapter, and then towards the end, I'll probably have chapters of. Sort of bringing everything together, but
okay. This
is quite early on to have a thesis plan.
Yeah, I may be getting a little ahead of myself. It's difficult when all the guests you've had so far have finished or just finished, and like, yes, I know what my thesis looks like. So yeah, it's an interesting perspective to have it from the other side of that particular hurdle.
Mm.
So I'm guessing you won't have had much chance to present at conferences or...
A couple of weeks ago, actually, I was at the Midlands Electrochemistry Conference. And that was my first non-school presentation.
Sure.
So I think that went down well.
Yeah, was that a poster presentation or a full?
That was a full talk presentation. I've also had a couple of poster presentations as well. But
generally well received.
I think so. So a lot of at that kind of conference, it's not so bio related. So I had to change the way I pitched some of my work, but it was generally quite well received, or they didn't understand a word about it, don't they?
For my experience, conferences are about 50-50 split then I guess you've had like a specific conference article title. What was it you were presenting? I realise it was a couple of weeks ago.
So that was the effect of anionic lipids on the behaviour of phytonic lipids.
Okay, and what is the effect of that first thing on the second thing?
It's quite complicated at the moment. I need to do more work.
Okay, fair enough. That's a nice mid-PhD response. I like that.
Yep.
Right, so going to be slightly different format to other episodes of this podcast because obviously Alex's job at the minute is PhD student.
Yep, PhD student.
So what are you going to look to do, and I realise this again, a couple of years into the future, once you've finished your PhD?
So far in the PhD, I've also taken a fair amount of teaching responsibility that not all PhD students do, so I've been taking small group tutorials. And I do actually really enjoy teaching chemistry to people who want to learn chemistry.
Yes,
so
the benefits of being at a university rather than a school is the people that are there typically there because they want to study the thing you're teaching.
So while I don't really see myself ever actually going to school teaching, knowing that teaching is a part of an academic career, I really do foresee a career in academia, I think.
That's good. So, a thing that we've not... I suppose we have touched on maybe a little bit in a conversation with Rebecca Welton, who was the biblical scholar that we had on, is research, women in science. It's a notoriously difficult field for women to make headroads into for a very a varied array of largely bullshit reasons, in my experience. So do you have any concerns about being able to make it as a woman researcher? And I absolutely think we should be looking to remove as many of those hurdles as we can.
So I think, I mean, it's not hurdle-free. I think it's ever-improving. I'm always inspired by my own supervisor, who is a woman, and she's recently been promoted, a promotion that she never actually thought she was going to get. Right. So we're all very pleased, but we think it's very well-deserved. Someone else not in my lab group, in a lab that I work with, she's a part of the Athena Swan committee of the university.
Were you about to explain the Athena Swan before I jumped in? Sorry.
I don't know a great deal about it, but it's improving the way that women can work in science, especially with mothers.
Yeah, because so, that's the big famous hurdle is... Yeah. People, because academia tends to move so quickly, you know, if you're out of the field for a year, suddenly there's all this work that's happened that you can't see. And that's one of the reasons why women don't get ahead. It's because, like, oh, well, you know, they'll have a child and then they'll be way behind and they'll never be good at the job again. And it's BS, frankly.
Yeah, so I know this woman, this is Holly Robertson in Birmingham University. She's a mother and she can't go to lab group meetings outside of the hours where her child is at school. So it's things like that make it easier for her and aren't a detriment to other people in the group. And I think it just makes a lot of people more respectful.
Yeah, it is. And I think the evidence is slowly mounting that there is no reason for this. My main supervisor was a mother, in fact, had her child whilst I was... whilst I was conducting my experiments. And, you know, it was just a case of... excuse me, noisy dog coming through the recording studio. It was a case of, you know, pass off some of those responsibilities to another member of staff whilst I need to be off looking after my child work happened, and then straight back in, no ill effects.
Yeah.
Yeah, so how big a field is the field that you're working in terms of finding jobs in academia?
Because I've got sort of bio applications of my work, I think there will be fields in industry, like pharmaceutical industry perhaps, and I've worked with some people that had had work with like forensic science as well, that I think that there's research with my kind of work as well. So I think there's a lot of industrial and sort of, I don't know, public useful.
Sure. So even if you didn't go into academia, and it sounds like you're a relatively big field compared to some of the other people that we've had on the podcast so far, you know, you could go and work for industry fairly easily.
Yeah.
Okay. And I guess maybe if the right role came along to you, would you consider going into industry?
I think so. It really is going to depend on what comes available when I'm finishing.
Yeah.
I really like living in Birmingham, but I kind of think that if I do stay in academia, it wouldn't be a good career move to stay at Birmingham University because I'd have then been there for 8 years and...
Yeah, and get out and see some of the world that isn't Birmingham.
Yeah, but I do really like the city, so...
Yeah, well, I can sympathise. I was in Southampton for 10 years, and in part because I like Southampton, in part because, you know, I have life there, my friends are there. But you do have to move away at some point.
Yeah.
I like to throw in a little bit of a curveball question at this point, and I think I might know the answer to this already. Do you think your research could contribute in any way to us building a better jetpack?
A jetpack? I don't think so. I'm not going to build a worse jetpack, I don't think.
Yeah, okay. No, that's a nice response. I didn't consider that. Yeah, sorry, I didn't warn you about that question when we did our run through of what I was going to ask you. Obviously, a lot of the people I know are like technology based. Obviously, biology, maybe applications for helping fix the people that the jetpack has broken, possibly some way in the future.
Perhaps.
Yeah.
Yeah. Who knows? I hadn't thought about a jetpack application chapter, but
no. But it's, you know, you're at an early enough stage in your research that you can go out and look and see what the applications are. So that's good. I'm glad we've had this conversation so that I can steer you down the right path.
Yep. It's all part of it, responsive to changes. Yeah,
exactly.
Indirection.
You've got to be a dynamic researcher. So we're going to move on now and talk a little bit about mental health. Okay. And so far we're at about 50-50 with people that have had mental health problems and people who haven't had mental health problems. What's been your experience?
So I had a bit of some mental health problems, which did end up translating to physical health problems. But so When I started my PhD, the first year of 4 years was a sort of a year in training at different universities, and I moved to Coventry for about 9 months.
My condolences.
Basically the thing. But I found that having moved away for such a short amount of time, and especially leaving Birmingham, and a lot of my friends are still in Birmingham, and being in a new sort of academic and career place, I think I really struggled with loneliness and. I got quite stressed out with some of the work and that, and that's then stress related to some physical health problems. So I haven't suffered from a great deal of mental health problems that I've had to get treated from, but sort of.
But the knock-on effect. And it seems like having then moved out of that situation has fixed.
Well. Sort of. So I mean, kudos to the NHS. I'm now a dependent, but yeah, having moved and being back in Birmingham and in a really supportive situation, I think has really improved that, but. So while you can suffer from mental health and stressful situations in academia, I think it can also be a very flexible and supportive environment. So my supervisor and my lab group have been wonderful, basically, when I came back and told them what the problems were. They're very flexible.
Yeah, and I think that's been a common theme throughout this, is that generally the department that you're working, even if the university doesn't have the right systems in place, the department that you're working for, because it's quite a small group, understand that you know, people will occasionally break and need some time to fix themselves. Yeah. That's quite good. Yeah. Okay, we're actually rattling through this. Yep. So maybe if we spend the next part talking more slowly.
Okay.
Yeah. Because we're at about 20 minutes and we've covered a lot of the questions already. That's okay. A short episode is fine. It's all good content. So I want to give you a little bit of an opportunity to explain to me and the listeners why you are more than just a research conducting robot, and why you're a real person. What sort of stuff drives you and motivates you, and the stuff that you enjoy?
Okay. So reasons for not being reasons for proving that I'm not a robot. I do occasionally make errors.
Yeah.
I'd say about 40% of the work that we do in the lab is tinkering with the equipment, just proving that the results we get are actually realistic, I suppose. I think every time I go to a conference and I'm able to talk about my research with people not directly in the field, and I get a chance to explain what we're doing and why we're doing it, I become a lot more, or I relight my fire for the work again.
I can sympathise with that, and I think it's quite common once you actually get out of the day-to-day drudgery of running the same test over and over again and running the same statistical test over and over again and talk to people about the impact of your work, it makes the actual drudgery of it worthwhile.
Yeah.
Okay. What's your favourite PhD moment so far?
PhD moment. It wasn't actually in my PhD. It was actually towards the end of my master's when I was writing up my dissertation. And it's gonna sound really sad and might say a lot about me, but when I put together a graph that actually represented about 3 months worth of work, and it had beautiful error bars in it, and
do like a good error bar.
It visually summed up quite a lot of work, and I was pretty proud of it. And I may or may not have printed it off and just went straight to my supervisor and said, "Look at this."
Impactful.
So I think that sums up quite a lot of how our lab group work.
I think that might be a unifying thing amongst certainly science and like results-based research of there is an increasing appreciation for just like a really, really good graph.
Yeah.
Like, you know, maybe the results aren't perfect even, but you know, the formatting. Oof.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm a big fan of a nicely formatted graph. Yeah. Okay, but we derailed you slightly. That was your, like, the thing that drives you about your research and proves that you're not just a research machine. How about on a more personal level, the sort of thing, the sort of activities that you enjoy?
So I'm quite into sort of watching anime and reading manga.
It's a family trait, that one, isn't it?
It is a family trait. I think followed my sister to my first Comic Con, and I've been going ever since pretty frequently. I make cosplay, and I think I have about 11 or 12 cosplay.
What are some of the costumes you've done?
So I'm a big fan of the series Fairy Tail, and I've done quite a few cosplays of the character Erza. She's got bright red hair, and I've got that wig that just gets reused a lot now.
We'll talk about what is maybe an appropriate picture to share with the podcast if you're willing.
Yeah, I can do. Appropriate, maybe in
let's say appropriate in terms of what you're willing to share with potentially an anonymous audience.
It all goes on Facebook, and I've worn it in London. So
well, fine, great.
Yeah, I actually wore that outfit pretty frequently, and it was because it was a hot day, and I figured that would be more comfortable.
Might as well wear something temperature appropriate.
Yes, that's a good phrase for it.
Yeah. Okay. Anything else, or just the? I think I keep derailing your answers by commenting on it.
That's fine. I tend to go off on a tangent.
It's good. We like tangents.
Yep. So while I was doing my undergrad, I was quite involved in the rock climbing society at Birmingham. That was a lot of fun, both socially and actively. So I haven't done quite so much rock climbing while doing my PhD.
Is that just a time? Time
thing, a health factor, but it's something I want to take up again. University of Birmingham's recently finished its new sports centre, and it's going to have a rock climbing wall in it, so that will be...
Has it got one of the fancy spinning ones that's like on a treadmill?
I don't know. I don't know if it's finished yet. Yeah. So I'm just hoping it stays standing so far.
Yeah, but nothing worse than a bouldering wall falling on you mid-climb.
Yeah, that would be the worst bouldering situation.
Yeah, I mean, there's realism and there's realism. There needs to be a boundary there, I think.
Yeah, so I'd quite like to be able to sort of set an experiment running, tootle off for a couple of hours and do some climbing. Then come back and hopefully it's worked. Yeah. It probably stopped.
Climbing academic walls, climbing actual walls. You've really got it all going on, haven't you?
Falling off all walls.
Yeah. Great. Well, unless I've forgotten something, that's the end of all my questions. Yeah. It's been a really compact session, but I think it's been good talking to you and learning a bit about what you've been doing. So do you have anything you'd like to plug whilst you're here? Any platforms that you're active on that you...
I don't think so anymore.
Okay, no, great. Well, well, thank you very much for appearing on this short episode of that Research Life podcast.
Thanks for asking me.
Yeah, let us know if you've got any publications anywhere that people can read. That'd be really useful. I mean, obviously, I know you're only just starting, but as and when you do have them, let us know, and we'd love to hear a bit more about your work.
I shall do.
Yeah, well, thank you. And I also got... I need to say thank you to my mum for listening at the end of each episode, because she's one of about 5 people that do. So thanks, mum.
Thank you.
And we'll see you all next time. Bye. Hey everyone, Phil here with another ending message. Thank you very much for listening to today's podcast. Sorry it was a bit of a shorter one today. It's just how these things go. If you've enjoyed the podcast, follow us on Facebook. We do have a Twitter account, but I don't use it because I don't have the attention span for Twitter. A review on iTunes would be good. That's going to help us build an audience of more than 5 people, which would be very good. And I'm in the slightly strange position of actually knowing who my next guest is going to be. So I thought we'd try something new. If you have a question that you would like to pose to someone who is doing a master's in a PhD in composition, then drop us a line on Facebook or via email, which is researchlifepod@gmail.com, and we'll filter some through and put them to him. Thanks again for listening, everyone. We'll see you next time.